Good morning, everyone. We're going to call the meeting to order for the ad hoc committee to review the roles and responsibilities of the chancellor. Winter, would you be so kind to take roll?
Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Vice Chair Perkins.
Here.
Regent Brooks.
Here.
Regent Carter.
Present.
Regent Carballo.
Here.
Regent Geddes.
Chair.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. I would have Regent Brooks lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Everyone, please stand.
Thank you. Please repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We will go to item one, public comment. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Kent Irvin, ERVIN, Nevada Faculty Alliance. We welcome the discussion of the roles and duties of the chancellor. Let's recognize that a discussion of the duties of the chancellor is also a discussion of the roles and duties of the board and of the presidents. Again, at a high level, do you want a chancellor who is in a coordinating role with the presidents or who mainly oversees the technical and who mainly oversees the technical administration at the system level? Or do you want a chancellor who is the academic leader of higher education Nevada with a major role in hiring and supervising presidents? Either model or a hybrid can work as long as everyone knows their roles and duties and responsibilities. At a more detailed level, this committee can and should identify and fix the structural issues in the rules of order and duties of the chancellor. There needs to be a clear line of approval for agenda items and official communications with no possibility of a stalemate because the bylaws call for joint collaboration or consultation, terms which can be ambiguous. The purpose of rules of order and bylaws are to allow an organization to make decisions through civil discourse, even when people strongly disagree, and to provide a mechanism to reach definite final decisions. Also, the requirement for access to agenda for requests from faculty groups to go through institutional presidents and the chancellor and the chief of staff mean there is no way for a formal request that is posed by any of those parties to reach the regents even for consideration for the agenda. That should be changed. Shared governance is essential for a healthy and well-functioning system of higher education. Shared governance is not just receiving input from faculty senates to tick off the box. It's the concept that faculty are intimately involved in developing policy and that faculty have the primary responsibility for curricular and program issues and academic standards and academic personnel decisions. Please keep that in mind as you address the duties of the chancellor. Thank you for your service and thank you for the opportunity to provide input.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Larry Daly. I'm an emeritus faculty member from the University of Nevada, Reno. When I think of the chancellor's office, I'm reminded of those Texas police officers cowering in the hallways while horrible things were happening to the people that those public servants were sworn to serve. I have a couple of issues, as you know, involving wrongdoing by a university president and a college president. The president is the chancellor's longtime friend. I've looked. I can't find the codes to address possible and apparent conflicts of interest in these matters. You need them. I've looked. I can't find the policies that provide transparency when the chancellor's office is supposed to be investigating matters of wrongdoing. You need them. I've looked. I can't find the codes mandating that the chancellor assures members of the public that their concerns are being taken seriously. I've written the chancellor several times. I've heard that the vice chancellor is involved. Haven't received a word from him. It's time for the regents to step out of the corridors. Protect the people you've sworn to protect, and that means getting your fingers dirty a little bit. I researched organizational culture and innovation. Innovation requires getting knowledge from people that you might be uncomfortable talking with. If you keep yourself in a hole and don't talk with the people that might cause you to rethink your prior attitudes, you won't learn from the people that maybe you need to learn the most from. Look it up, Diffusion of Innovations Theory by Everett Rogers. It's what we're supposed to be doing, R1 research, and I expect this group to know that. I'd like to conclude with, on a little bit of a lighter manner, my perceptions the past several months have been, how many chancellors does it take to change an org? I mean, not chancellors, how many regions does it take to change an organization for the better? The joke? Change? What do you mean change? All the regions have my email address. None of them's reached out. A couple of university presidents or college president and university president have my email. They've absolutely refused to talk with me. Yes. And I believe you have my email. I'd like to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any public comment in Elko, if we're transmitting to Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko at this time.
Thank you. Any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, we will go to Chair's report. And again, this is our second meeting of this ad hoc committee. And today, everything is also for information only. We're getting input. And then it's the intention to have a third meeting following our board special meeting in October, which I think is October 14th. And at that meeting, it's the intention to have some possibility of actionable items at that October meeting. So that being said, I will go to item 3, NC constituency input. And we wanted to allow an opportunity for the NC Classified Council to provide some input. We didn't know if there's anyone available to provide that now? Not seeing any, so we will move on to item 4. Item 4 is the external stakeholder input, and I was going to maybe ask the chancellor to describe how, maybe the, again with publicizing, how this meeting was going to take place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. And to prepare for this section of the agenda, we had the IT folks email to the listservs that we maintain. Folks sign up to receive news from us, to receive changes to the handbook from us, and to receive other items from either the Chancellor's office or from the board office. So we've sent out a notice to all those folks encouraging their attendance. We also posted a special notice on the front page of the website encouraging this item for participation. And then, of course, you've had general public comment as well. So, and I will say to the board, I made this decision so that I'm not picking and choosing who an external group is. There's no way I would have thought to invite them all. And so I did not wish to be the picker of winners and losers of who got to have an invitation to express their opinion. So I went with those folks who have expressed some longstanding interest in receiving information from this body.
Thank you, Chancellor, for that explanation. And not seeing any presenters here in Las Vegas. Didn't know if Reno, if there was anyone there to present on item 4.
No, there is not.
Thank you. How about in Elko? I'm going to assume that's negative. So we will go to item.
I have a question.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, sir. I was wondering, is there a number, like, did you get any responses that are not, like, any feedback at all from the constituency? Or from the stakeholders?
For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. Mr. Chair, to you and through you to Regent Perkins. The only comments you have are from public comment that were submitted online. There were no responses sent to my office.
With that, we will go to item 5, roles and responsibilities of the chancellor. And this is the opportunity for the regents on the committee or for those regents in attendance to continue to give us some input, suggestions of what we should maybe consider for actionable items at the next meeting. I was going to call on Regent Brooks if he wanted to provide some information.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. I do have some considerations that I'd like to verbally place just so that it's publicly on the record. In evaluating what some of this looks like and based on the experiences that we have shared and come through over the last year, I would say that the role of the chancellor should really be equivalent to that of more of a chief administrative officer, in that the position should support NCHI operational systems and staff performances in a manner that allows for adjustments and improvements within the system while creating a positive workplace culture. In other words, implementation of policy should be a primary focus for this role. The position should be one in which there's a focus on system initiatives and supporting the presidents with the implementation of approved policy from more of a task-oriented or operational perspective. And some other considerations of what this might look like, the position should be equal to the president's positions, but with the processes and policies as a focus. The chancellor should, I'm offering these as suggestions, the chancellor should not evaluate the presidents, and the board should hold the presidents accountable. The chair and a small committee of board members should be evaluating the presidents so that there's clear understanding in terms of when we talk about those dual accountability measures, that it's laid out clearly, that the board has an interest in not only supporting the presidents, but being able to participate in evaluation. The description of the chancellor's duties and responsibilities should be clear and reflect that the chancellor cannot terminate a president. Additionally, it should be made clear that the dual reporting system exists in which the presidents report to the board and the chancellor and the presidents may contact any member of the board at any time without fear of repercussions. And so I think as we move forward, it would be great if we can expand communication capabilities, not only with the board and the system office, but with the board and presidents as well. For accountability processes, the chancellor should have the same disciplinary clause as the presidents, in which is described in section 3.14.C in the handbook, thereby allowing the board a broader arena for disciplinary action should something occur. The chancellor's cabinet should have direct access to the board, as well as the board should be able to have direct access to the cabinet. And again, those lines of communication, I think, are extremely important, and it should be made clear so that we're not creating any barricades of communication with inside the board and those involved in the system. The chancellor's cabinet review process should include members of the board, particularly when salary increases and performance measures are being reviewed. And if that looks like it becomes too much in terms of what the board has oversight for, then okay. But perhaps there's some types of communications that may occur with inside that cabinet for the chancellor and the board regarding processes of how things are getting done. The chancellor's evaluation process should be conducted not only by the chair, but I'm going to offer at a minimum a small board committee or a board committee, whatever that looks like. And the chancellor's position should have a matrix designed for performance goals and accountability that's made very clear in terms of expectations. I would offer that the chancellor, or if we look at chief administrative officer, should have the ability to appoint some positions with inside that cabinet. And I'm going to offer that appointed positions could be the CFO, the student or academic officer, and chief of staff. And those are some considerations that I thought could be added to the conversation as we move forward and taking a look at reevaluating some of our own processes. So I appreciate the time, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to expand on a few of these things and maybe contradict as, you know, we hire the chancellor, and then the chancellor should be able to hire whatever staff it wants as far as the system office, and we should not be involved in that process. We used to be involved, and we pulled ourselves out of it and basically just said, as long as the chancellor is working within the chancellor's budget, you do what you need to do with the priorities that the board needs to make. The other point, though, is I think the chancellor needs to evaluate the presidents until we actually get permission from the legislature to do presidential evaluations in closed session. I just don't see how the board can do it. I mean, I think the chancellor needs to do it, and they can consult with the chair of the board. But other than that, we step outside of open meeting law, and until that gets changed, I think the chancellor still needs to do the annual evaluations, and we need to get those done and in the folders, and then have that information available when we do the presidential evaluations on the three-year cycle. Again, I'm a big proponent that we need to get the presidential evaluations out of the open meeting law so we can do them in closed session again. But I don't know if we'll get there without the legislature. But until then, the chancellor needs to do those evaluations and not us, because once we're in it, it becomes an open meeting law again. And that concerns me. And I think in the personnel session, I think we do need to, or not personnel session, but the section, is just make it clear that the regents have basically 10 employees and then 15,000 employees underneath them. But we hire presidents, and we evaluate presidents, and we hire the chancellor, and we hire the chief of staff. And outside of those 10 people, that's as far as we should go in the process. And as I mentioned briefly earlier, we used to have to approve all of the chancellor's hiring of vice chancellors. And sometimes the provosts for presidents, and it just really isn't our role. You know, we hire people to run their institutions, and we need to trust that who we hire run their institutions. And if they're not, then it's the people on top that we need to discuss. And it's not our duty to dive into the weeds. And just the last point is in regards to talking to vice chancellors or vice presidents or provosts. I do it all the time, but I always make sure the president knows that I'm doing it so that there's no surprises and the presidents are aware of any communication or the chancellor's aware. So I'm not sure that needs to be changed that much. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. And thank you, Regent Brooks, for your input. And Regent Geddes, so that kind of shows everyone that, okay, there's some issues that we're going to grapple with at our October meeting, and then we'll take some action to see what we forward to the full board to see what we're going to do as far as any changes to the roles and responsibilities of the chancellor. Regent Perkins, you look like you're ready. Please.
Just a few comments. I think we need to have some formal matrix design, as Regent Brooks mentioned, so that it's fair across the board of what we're looking at when we do those evaluations, or the chancellor does those evaluations. And that should be clearly delineated so that everybody knows what they're going to be expected of. And also about the contracts, I know it says that the chancellor is responsible for the signing of the contracts, which, yes, he should be or she should be. But can we get reporting back to the board is also important about which contracts have been signed and their implications for the system, which is kind of missing.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Any other?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Regent Carter.
Sure. So I just wanted to provide a few thoughts based on the 5A attachment there. So on the finance roles, it has the CFO reporting to the board. I don't know that that's a great idea, but it'd be interesting to have a whole conversation about that. Under personnel, we have open and regular communication from the presidents to the chancellor. We probably could add something very similar to the regents as well, whether it's requiring the opportunity to have a quarterly meeting or something like that, just to make sure that happens. I am going to disagree with Regent Geddes. So our vice chancellors, in my experience, survive our chancellors. And so it tends to be a thing where it would be great to have some input as to who these folks are, because then the next chancellor is going to have to live with that person. But it's only at that high cabinet level that I think we should be at. And I don't see that as being in the weeds, as those people also are generally the staff, if you will, for the committees of the board. So I think the two things kind of relate there a little bit. On the presidential evaluations, I think that's a whole conversation to be had. One could argue that our current process is not fantastic, and you could argue that the open meeting laws is part of the problem or the cause for some of those problems. But at the same time, I really want to see us get away from having just the chancellor and the chair being the people that are doing that. That's caused some issues, in the past. And so that needs to be expanded out. I see under board other that there's an establishment of an executive committee. I think we've kind of looked at that a handful of times, and I don't know that you can legally do that, but there might be some sort of other mechanism for evaluating whether it is a community board, like the three-year one was, the one where we had go outside to a consultant and all that. Maybe something more like that could happen on the yearly evaluations, rather than just leaving it to the president and the chancellor and the chair. So that's all my thoughts for today.
Thank you, Regent Carter. And let me go Regent Geddes and Regent Boylan. Regent Geddes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify, and I don't disagree with what you said, Patrick, but the one thing, again, I think we need open meeting law clarification or changes. I don't think we can do an executive committee beyond the chair in these evaluations and until there's a change in state law. So I think that would be very tricky. So I would just be hesitant to go that far until we saw what we got through the legislature. And maybe part of this is just asking for that change where we could have executive sessions again. The other part is just clarifying with the chancellor and the board what communications go forward or not. I mean, the chancellor needs to get a lot of communications and communicate with the cabinet and the staff and the presidents outside of our purview so that it's as they're developing things to bring to the board, not everything that we need to know at the board level, but as they're discussing things and bringing things to the board. So I think there needs to be a lot of flexibility in what the chancellor is allowed to do in regards to communication. And, you know, I've been a big proponent of the president's notifying the board whenever any issues come up that we don't want to read anything in the newspaper that we haven't been notified about. And I don't like getting phone calls from reporters when something pops up and I don't know what it's about. But I think I think the chancellor and the president's discretion should still be allowed there as far as communications and how all of that goes. And then sending it to us, A, when we know it's going to be an issue, but B, they need to have internal communications that don't need to drop to the forefront. So, thank you.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Chair Dubrova. I appreciate this time. I'm not on this committee, but I had something, and it's going to be quite radical, I guess, because people don't like change. I will agree with Regent Brooks that we do need a closer connection between the presidents and the board. We hire the presidents, and we have a big say in it. And I don't see why, besides all other things considered, we even, it's new, we have to change. Everything has to change as we go along. That we even should have a position that is, you know, the chancellor. We've had some issues with the last chancellor, and we've all got, I won't say with our pants down, but flat-footed. I think we need direct connection to the presidents. We've been elected by the people to be on a board to do something about education. Our role is not to just show up for meetings and just about rubber stamp everything and go ahead with it. I know there's a lot of change that will be needed, but these are new ideas. We should go with the times, and I think we can manage, or think about it at least, something that's totally out of the box. People love that saying. I hate that saying, out of the box. But if that helps people, then, well, get the fudge out of the box and think and make changes. It'll be a great savings on taxpayers. We have to think about the students eventually. They are our main reason we are here, thanks to the taxpayers. So that's just a thought I have. And I think it would be one less issue or problem to deal with like we had with the last chancellor. So thank you for your time, sir. And I hope we at least think about this.
Thank you, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, sir.
And I do see Regent Geddes with his hand. I was just going to see if anyone else. Regent Geddes. Then Regent Ariscotta.
I just wanted to add in that, you know, we all the presidents report to the board, and I communicate with all the presidents regularly. And when I go into a campus with a specific issue, I go through the president. But I don't think any of us 13 should have any hesitation of talking to any of the presidents. So to Regent Boylan, I would just say, if you have a question for a president, go for it. And before I yield to Regent Ariscotta, I was just going to ask Chancellor Urquiagua, what are your thoughts? I mean, I know you've only been here short term, and you're termed out, so You've said your definitive end date, but I'm just curious where you're thinking we should go based on your experience.
And Regent Geddes, excuse me, the chancellor's going to maybe respond. We'll let Regent Arascada go, and then when the regents have kind of given some input, I think Dale will share some thoughts. Regent Arascada.
Thank you, Chair. Couple questions of some of the items I'd like to denote throughout the attached documentation we received. Items 32 through 39 is the vacancy in the Office of Chancellor. I believe Regent Brooks touched upon this just a few minutes ago. I highly commend Chair McAdoo for her search of Chancellor and the diligence that she set forth in regards to the Regent Handbook, and she followed it to a T. But there, we may do expand on a few of the items in regards to the vacancy of the Office of Chancellor. There's 13 of us on this on the board. We should all work collaboratively on this. In regards to President's search 40 through 44, also, I'd like to have some more collaboration with the board and input for each of those items, possibly some more communication or increased communication throughout the vacancy positions and in search of that individual. But the one I wanted to really touch upon is on Title IV, Chapter 3, Section 29. Bear with me. Subsection 4, it's the salary increases. Other than merit increases as government, as governed by the provisions of subsection 2, which are approved by the chancellor in accordance with the provisions contained in section 28. What I'm getting at is a lot of in the past, since I've been on the board and since I've been watching the board with Regent Geddes, from what I understand, there have been approvals underneath the dollar amount of $10,000, which do not have to be provided or presented to the Board of Regents, in which some of the salary increases have been going through or could potentially go through human resources at $999.99. We all took an oath of office. The 13 of us took a fiduciary oath of office in which we need to maintain the budgetary sound budget of this board and of the NSHE and for the students and faculty alike. One of the few of the items I would like to really touch upon is that the chapter needs to be increased oversight by the boards, reporting to the board in collaboration at the minimum of three or perhaps frequent collaboration with the chair and the vice chair. Just an arbitrary amount of increased salary increases should not be taking place, in my opinion. Providing autonomy to the chancellor without the appropriate checks and balances, it's just a foolish way to run a business. Regardless of the chancellor, it's just a foolish way of running a business, let alone a system of higher education. The dollar amount in which the chancellor can have autonomy to make or take trips or cabinet retreats and or presidential retreats, regardless of that dollar amount, should come in through by the board. I know Regent Geddes and I have spoken about this in the past about the certain dollar amounts that had to be approved or were required to be approved by the board. But we're skimming by and barely running in the red right now. We need to make sure we have at least some sort of a stronger grip upon the dollar amount that's coming out of the wallet. And I feel that Regent Geddes may have a response to this, which I hope and we can have a great discussion about this. But we need to have more transparency in regards to where the money is being spent, not just for us as a board, but for the constituency, the students, the faculty alike. We need to know where the money is going to be going. And if we give a chancellor carte blanche to spend whatever amount of money they want to spend, that's just a signed checkbook for them to quite possibly spend foolishly or without thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Arascada. I might ask the chancellor to give a few thoughts. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me go with Amy, and then we'll go with Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Charity Brava. I agree with a lot that's been said, and I think that this has been a very productive dialogue that we've had. I think, first, I'd like to say that I am more comfortable with a chancellor that is somewhat in a CEO role. However, I think it is important for the board to have that direct dialogue with presidents. And I, like Regent Geddes has said, have had good relations with all of our presidents, and I feel like my communication with them has been open and very free. So I think some of that might be just some more solidifying of how we do business as a board, not necessarily a wholesale change in policy in that regard. Overall, I think I'm hearing that there's a lot that has to do with communication and how we evaluate presidents and the chancellor in this regard. And I think that that's where our focus for any kind of policy change might be, at least primarily. So that's my suggestion for that. And I do realize that the open meeting law is an obstacle for us being on other boards within the state. We've had the same conversation, and open meeting law is great for transparency in government. It's difficult in terms of personnel. Like I said, on other boards that I've sat on, we've had this struggle with directors and heads of agencies, so to speak. And that's something that I don't know how easily we can overcome. In our state, our open meeting law is in some ways almost sacred ground, and I appreciate that. I think it's important that the citizens of our state understand how we conduct our business, and that also means how we evaluate those under our charge, in addition to how much we pay them and making sure that they have that they do the job that they've been hired to do. So I think that that's a continued discussion, and hopefully a productive discussion with the legislature, perhaps this session. So I'll leave it at that at this point. I'm also curious to hear what the acting chancellor has to say in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. And we'll go Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. And because we've brought it up several times where communication it seems to be one of the main running themes this morning, along with fiduciary duties by the board and other oversight. I've never recognized there to be an issue with members of the board reaching out to presidents to engage in conversations, particularly about agenda items or questions that could be fielded regarding agenda items. But I do recognize that I think it would demonstrate an area of support for presidents regarding communications, that there is nothing precluding them from having and participating in as open of conversation as they would like to have with any member of the board. And based on my perspective of things that have gone in the past, it's just a matter of reinforcing that through policy so that there is no doubt that a president may pick up the phone and have that open dialogue with a regent without any fear of repercussion, so that we're operating more of a let's all be engaged in reasonable and responsible communications to affect policy and support the system, rather than a president having fear about doing that based on management style of whoever it is that comes in, regardless of whether they are situated as a chancellor, as we have known this position, or a chief administrative officer. And those are some things that I think can help support open dialogue. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. Regent Geddes.
Thank you. And just a short, I just want to make it clear, as I said at the last meeting, and I think I stated earlier, is we have 10 employees as the Board of Regents, and the Chancellor and the 8 presidents and our Chief of Staff all report to us. And we need to make sure in the code and how this comes out that that is clear, that it does not go through the Chancellor to us, but it is, they all report to us. And as Regent Brooks said, we can all talk to any president at any time and discuss any issues and put things out there. But in the actual matter of process, we need to have a way to review the presidents on an annual basis until, which I doubt it will happen, but until the open meeting law changes, that there's a way for an evaluation of presidents. And maybe we just put in more information as far as us being able to communicate to the Chancellor any concerns we have with any of the presidents or any positives we have with any of the presidents, or that the Chancellor reaches out to us in those annual evaluations that stack up for the formal 360 evaluation. I'm not going to jump into you, Joe. So.
Thanks, Regent Geddes. Let me have the Chancellor straighten this all out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. Well, that's a lot. You've sort of summed up in 30 minutes my 3 months on this job. So I'll give you my first I will give you my sort of impressions of the job, since I'm the one that has sat in it at least for these 3 months. And then I'll try to be responsive or provide some maybe context for some of the things that I've heard. So first and foremost, this job probably, if I had to bucket the work into categories, as one does in a typical job description, not what is in the handbook, which describes the role of this job, there is a large part of the job is administrative. There is an office to run. There are more committees than one can shake a stick at, as my late mother used to say. There are contracts to be signed, work with the legal office, work with the finance team. So there really is, this is an administrative role. There is a big bucket of that work just to make the trains run on time. There is also sort of a deeper dive in the budget and political realm, because for us, those sort of go together. So this is a job that, in my view, requires someone who understands how the legislature works, the appropriations process works, the budget process works to the institutions and up from the institutions, and can work with the political players who are in the ecosystem which the Nevada system of higher education exists in, the governor, the legislature, other governmental entities, the governor's cabinet. So there's a political job here that is largely, but not always, about money. There are also policy issues, what programs we should emphasize in workforce development or the talent pipeline, what is the system's policy to be communicated, and this is policy little p, not big P, what's written in the handbook, about financial aid or refugees or immigrant students. So there's just a big bucket of work that's about that. which I think is underrepresented in the handbook. And if one does not have political skills, this job would be awfully hard. And I say that as someone who, I'm not good at very many things in life, but I have spent my life in politics. And so I understand that part of this job pretty well. And it doesn't get talked about a lot. What gets talked about is the administrivia, as a boss of mine used to call it. All those contracts that get signed and all those meetings and those things that one wonders if I think if one is a regent or if one is a faculty member, well, what is the chancellor doing with all of that administrative stuff? And then the last piece is the relationships with the institutional presidents. And it is the most unclear part of this job because everyone loves the dual reporting relationship and the dual evaluation relationship and the dual communications relationship, except the chancellor. So it's great for the 13 of you, and it's great for the 8 presidents, but if you're the person in the middle, then you're in the middle. And if I try to advise a president and they say, no, I'm not going to do that, I'm just going to proceed, what do I do? Do I go down the road of discipline, which is spelled out ridiculously in detail in the code, but they've already talked to you, and where the disciplinary process ends is with you. And so I think I laughed at the last meeting inside because all the presidents love that reporting relationship and the regents love that reporting relationship. If you sit in this chair, it's much less fun. And so now I'll try to be responsive, but it is part of the job. Like, my job is to help presidents make difficult decisions, and the WSHI CEO report called that out. Sometimes my job is to sort of hold the presidents accountable and herd cats. They're all tremendously competent professionals, and they don't always agree with each other, and therefore sometimes their institutions are in conflict. Who resolves that conflict? Me? Them? The 13 of you? One of you? The one that they happen to call? So that is the last piece I'll say, and then I'll try to be more responsive. Remember, there are 13 of you. And so anytime you want us to be communicative with you, I have to be careful not to communicate with you in a way that creates a serial quorum, so do the presidents. And anytime I talk to any of you, with due respect, it takes up time. So if I were to communicate with you all each week, that's 2 days of my life just communicating with you. Multiply that by the 8 presidents. And so that, while the communication, I totally support you and I totally understand what you're saying, also remember the sheer numbers that you're talking about. So that's kind of the buckets of work and what makes them challenging. And let me say here, except for the last 2 weeks, I really like this job. So thank you again for putting me here. Last 2 weeks have been less fun, but that's normal, right? We all have ups and downs. So now let me try to be responsive to a couple of the main items that I heard you say. The presidential evaluation system and the evaluation of the chancellor should be addressed. There's very little description of how you evaluate the chancellor. There's endless sections of code about how you evaluate the presidents. And I understand the open meeting law concerns. I would also say we are public employees, and that is the rule. You signed up for that when you took a job as a public employee. You don't get to have private evaluations if you are in a position of leadership. And so I do think the board in some way, whether that is the chair and the vice chair or a personnel committee, should be more involved with the chancellor in those evaluations because of the system you all set up that you all like so much, where they can talk directly to you and get guidance from you. Therefore, then you should be involved, because otherwise I or the person in this chair has been left out of conversations, and I am expected to evaluate the outcomes of them. And so that immediately puts me in conflict with the president. So as I am now trying to help the presidents make recommendations for what their evaluation code looks like, I'm struggling with it because of that. And that is the system that was established in 1968, as I read to you last meeting. And so it's not new. It's still imperfect. That's okay. America is an imperfect exercise in being a democratic republic. And so as we continue to iterate as a country, we can continue to iterate here. But that's an area that I would recommend you really give some thought to. What is the role of the board or representative voice of the board in annual and periodic evaluations? Because it's, I think, broken today. The role of the chancellor's office in construction of the agenda, some of that language is old. And so you have elevated what used to be a secretary to the board to the role of chief of staff, and it is the board office and the chief of staff who really prepare the agenda. And so I think that could be cleared up as well, just so it's clear. As I have said to your chief of staff and special counsel, my job is sort of to provide substance. The way it gets presented and organized and communicated about is really the board office's job. I'll provide a briefing paper, I'll provide content, and then I'll defend those things that advance from the chancellor, or the presidents will defend those things that advance from the president. So probably need to look at the agendizing section of the code. And then with due respect to the regent, I would remind you, you have three employees in system administration in addition to the eight presidents. You have the internal audit position, and he is in the back of the room, so I'll talk about him while he's here. So I would just remind you of that. And I would say in the code, we could be clearer about the board's three employees for system administration, or the chancellor who holds this body of work. And I agree with Regent Brooks, that body of work is academics, finance, and I would add legal, sir. Those are really the three required positions, I think, in this office. And then there is the internal audit function and the body of work there that goes directly to the board. And then there is the chief of staff and special counsel to the board, and clearer, what is the body of work that goes there? And then there are the eight presidents. So I guess those are the, to be responsive, I think those are, I think that's more than enough, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chancellor. And earlier I was saying that our intent is to have things to come back at our board meeting October. Was it this year or next year that we were going to do that? Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chancellor, for correcting me on the employees. And I apologize for Joe. My bad. But I'm just curious, Chancellor, what's your recommendation as far as evaluation of the presidents? I mean, we're kind of stuck between the open meeting law and how many regents can participate. We don't have the executive panel. It's really up to you to do the annual evaluations. We know the 360-degree evaluations are just not pretty to do in public, but that's the law and that's the way we have to do it. But I'm just curious if you have any recommendations based on your experience and what you've seen on how we can improve the presidential evaluations on the annual basis. I just don't know what you have out there, because I'm kind of at a blank, and I don't know what code changes we need to make, or and similarly with the code changes to the evaluation of your position.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. Thank you, Regent Geddes, to the chair, through the chair to you. So a couple things. Let me deal with one thing first that a couple regents said to which I was not responsive, and that is a performance matrix. That's an absolute, should be added to the code, that at the beginning of a year, whether that's an academic year or a calendar year or the personnel year, I don't care, the presidents and the chancellor, and I should think the board chief of staff and the internal audit director, should agree upon a set of goals and metrics for the year to which they are evaluated. Otherwise, it is this roaming, well, I didn't like the way you did that, Dale. And that is a gotcha game that makes this job hard and makes the job of the person sitting on the other side hard and leaves you out of the process entirely. So first and foremost, we should institute, what do you want me to do this year? Or what do you want the presidents or your other staff to do this year? That has to be established at the beginning of the year. I think that's first. Second, for the annual evaluation, I do think that the code could be clearer in the chancellor's requirement to consult with the board at a time about, like, tell me what you think of the president based on that matrix, and then probably to write and conduct the evaluation with the chair so that it is not just the chancellor, it is a voice of the elected body as well. The periodic evaluation, the way it's set up, it's to be done by a committee. We've been all over the map, I've told over the years, of who's on that committee and how that committee gets constituted and how that committee gets its 360 information. The presidents have feelings about that. I think they'll make some recommendations as you look at that part of the code. But I would say to the board, county managers, city managers are evaluated by their city council at a public meeting. We signed up for public jobs. I recognize it's not always pretty. Well, it might be prettier if you had a matrix for on what you were evaluating us. Then we know when we go in. And personnel evaluations are so you can decide if you wish to change our pay, keep us in our jobs, or not, and give us counsel on how we can be better and celebrate what we did well, right, so we can grow. So the fact that it has to be done in public, it's done in public for county managers and city managers, and I think superintendents at the district level. They may have the ability to have part of their evaluation closed prior. I can't remember from the last time I worked in a school district. But I guess I don't have a lot of sympathy for it's hard to have an evaluation done in public, and that's because I've been a public official most of my life. And so that I'll just say it. The presidents probably disagree with me on that. But I think if we were clearer about what one is being evaluated on, it might be easier to face that public evaluation at the periodic. But for sure, at the annual, I think writing into the code that the chancellor should consult and have the chair and or vice chair, I don't have a preference, participate is fine.
And to that point, I think one of the reasons we created the reports from the institutions where they come in quarterly and talk about their goals and their aspirations and where they're going was for that to be included in their annual evaluations. You know, this is what we're looking at for graduation, for retention, et cetera. And those are all public documents, and those should be part of, if the president says, this is where we're going, and this is where we need to be, that needs to be part of that matrix that you're talking about and the metrics, and that should be in there. So I guess just looking back at the last year, you know, we can pull in all of the reports on metrics, and we expected to be here, and this is where we are in student enrollment and fundraising, et cetera. And that should be part of the evaluation process, because all of that is what the institutions have put forward and what is public. So just putting that out there, that I think that was part of the reason we put that out there, was we need to know where you're going, what your goals are, and we need to be able to measure you on how you're doing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Regent Geddes.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Regent Boylan, I see your hand.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And this goes directly to our present chancellor. I've had a long talk with him, and I've seen what he's done, and he's amazing with his public and political capabilities. In no way am I talking about you, that I'm saying we don't need a chancellor. You've given us your notice, and you know, we know where you stand, so I like that. Now, I heard you say, and this is where we should be aware of things, the last 2 weeks have not been too much fun for you. So is there any way that we, as the board, can do something about that? I mean, we brought you on board. You were highly recommended, did our due diligence, and saw you as being the best person. So is there something that's happened that we don't know about? I know Regent Brooks talked about communication, and that's something I've found that's been lacking in the last 2 years. I've been lost because there was no communication in any area. And that's why if you communicate to us, let us know before something gets out of hand. Is there someone you need me to go and slap around, or Brooks? I don't know. I'm just kidding. But we'd really like to know what it is that hasn't been just right for you. So, and I think you're doing a great job. Thank you.
And Regent Boylan, I just want to remind, as we're sticking to the agenda, as we talk about roles and responsibilities, I think I could let the chancellor respond in a general way of how he feels appropriate to respond to Regent Boylan.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Regent Boylan, for your kind comments. I'd just say, I guess my honeymoon's over. It's not an easy job. It's not easy having 13 bosses. It's not easy having 8 presidents who are one's equal who predate one. That's all. I'm fine, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. I think we've brought out issues that we have some homework to do, and as we prepare for our October meeting, I'm going to now proceed to item 6, new business. Any regents suggesting new business for this committee? Regent Arascotto.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho, with that point. I do appreciate it. One of the items I'd like to bring up for new business, and this possibly is going to be something later on the agenda deep down the road, is the notice of non-reappointment and the notice of termination for system, which is in Title II, Chapter 5, Section 5.9. What I've been noticing is, recently, there's been a separation of services between individuals working in the system and faculty and staff. I'm not referring to faculty and staff. I'm referring to the system. One of the items I've been looking at is the minimum notice of non-reappointment and non-tenured academic and administrative faculty, but also under the NSHE code of 5.9.4, 5.9.6, which is otherwise in an employment contract, notice of non-reappointment of employment of non-tenured staff, administrative faculty hired before March 1st, 2005, and other items throughout that section. But one of my questions is, and I'm not focusing on faculty or staff, I want to emphasize that. I'm focusing on administration. In regards to the allocation of funds being paid to that individual upon the separation of their employment through the system. As I stated earlier, we had an oath of office that all 13 of us took to maintain the fiduciary responsibility of the system. We've had a recent separation of services with individuals in the system office in which they were allocated 3 months, 6 months of severance pay.
Regent Arascotto, if I could, I think we got your item kind of defined for new business. So is that okay if we keep it at that?
I think it's a wise way. Good call, Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. We'll Dale has, excuse me, Chancellor has that written down so we can kind of work on that to get it on an either this committee's agenda or the full board's agenda. We'll kind of work with that. Anyone else for new business? Seeing none, we will go to public comment. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Thank you very much. This will conclude our meeting.